This is a Sandy Boy Productions podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another Podcast with Lindsay Hine. I'm your host, Lindsay. Thanks for joining me today. Today, my guest is Rachel Drake. Rachel is a Nike trail runner, and she recently won the Black Canyons 100K, which got her a golden ticket to run Western States, which will be her first 100-mile race. Rachel is the mom to one, married to Tyler Green, who has been on this podcast. He came on the show after he placed second at Western States a few years ago. Rachel is also a medical doctor, about to enter her residency this summer. So we hear all about how she does the school, the running, the momming. She actually qualified for the 2024 Olympic trials at CIM in December, running a 2:35 marathon. She decided not to run the trials. It actually wasn't in the plan. That was part of her training for Black Canyons. She did run in the 2020 Olympic trials. She had qualified for that race at the Grandma's Marathon in 2019 in 2:40:17. Rachel has had success in the past using a marathon cycle to train for ultras and seen big success. So that's part of the reason she decided to do it this way, this time around, CIM to Black Canyons. We're going to hear all about all these things in the conversation. I loved getting to know Rachel, and I know you're going to love getting to know her as well. She's got a passion for camaraderie, the sisterhood of the sport. One of my very favorite things about Rachel is when she talks about you and your competition. I'm going to not say this right. Basically, like, you're using each other to bring the best out in each other. Like, you want to race to the best of your abilities, and you hope that'll bring that out in your competitors and vice versa. I love the thought of that. I love it so much. If you enjoy the show, let Rachel know that you listened and give her some love on social media. She is Rachel Ray Drake on Instagram. I'm Lindsay Hine 626 on Instagram. I'd also love to hear from you and love to hear what you think about this episode. I am super pumped to let you all know, anybody running the Bayshore Marathon Saturday, May 25th, because I will be there for the 42nd annual running. I will be announcing at the start and finish line. I'm also going to be doing a live podcast recording with the one and only Des Linden at the historic Traverse City Opera House on Thursday night, May 23rd. So make sure if you're coming into town for the weekend for the race, you get there by Thursday to come to the show. We will have more information about getting registered for all that coming soon. This is a great race in beautiful Traverse City, Michigan, and I'm so excited to join the Bayshore team this year. There's going to be a shakeout run. There's going to be a giveaway we're doing that will be announced on May 10th. We are going to choose one winner to have an exclusive dinner with myself and Des prior to the show that's on Thursday night. So lots of cool stuff going on. The marathon and the half are actually sold out, but there are a few remaining spots for the 10K, and you can register for that at BayshoreMarathon.org. All right, friends, please enjoy my conversation with Rachel Drake. All right. Hey, friends. Welcome to the show, Rachel Drake. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, spring is starting to poke its head out here in Portland, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, what's a Portland spring? I probably have a really, like, a not correct view of Portland. I've never been there, and I just think, like, rain and clouds, and that's probably not all true.
Not all true, but there is a lot of rain. But that's kind of the price we pay for all the greenery. But spring in Portland, there's, you know, our daffodils are starting to poke their heads up, and just lots of new blooms in the neighborhood. So it's really nice.
So congratulations on winning the Black Canyon 100K.
Thank you so much.
How is that sitting with you still a couple weeks out?
Really well. I'm super pleased with that effort. You know, sometimes I think things come up on race day where you're not able to run to your ability. And I'm grateful that I was able to get what I think was really the most out of myself on that day. So I feel really satisfied with that, but I'm still definitely recovering.
Yeah. So what are we 2 weeks? Is it been 2 full weeks?
Yeah, I think two and a half weeks. Okay. Yeah.
When you say get the most out of yourself, like, how do you define that?
I think just knowing that I didn't have many moments where I got soft mentally. I think there are always moments in races when you are struggling, and especially in trail running, if no one's around, you're by yourself, it's really easy to just back off the gas a little bit. But I spent 15 miles with the woman who ended up second, Becca, and she really held me accountable. And in those moments where I think I would have backed off a little bit, I just couldn't because we were racing. So yeah, I feel really happy that she helped me out with that.
Yeah, I love hearing you talk about like how working together and like racing against these other women can help you guys bring the best out in each other. Want to dig into the race, want to dig into so much like leading up to the race as well. But since you've never been on the podcast, I'd love to hear just like a quick backstory of how you fell in love with running and how it even came into your life.
Yeah. So it kind of started way back in high school. I was actually on the tennis team my freshman and sophomore year. And then we would always run a mile time trial. And I was the only one on the tennis team who actually tried at that. Most people just walked it. And my middle school PE teacher was the track coach. Or I think it was a cross country and track coach. But she pulled me aside and she said, "Hey, you know, you're running really strong. Like maybe you should come out for the track team." So I ended up doing that my junior and senior year of high school. And then, yeah, ended up running in college at the University of Minnesota. And honestly, after college, I was pretty burnt out. It was just a lot of a competition. I mean, when you run in college, when you run distance in college, you have cross country, indoor and outdoor track. And I was always, we would call it a bubble person, like someone who's on the bubble of making the travel team, making the conference team, making the national team. And I feel like riding that thin edge for 5 years of like, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it? It was really exhausting.
I bet. Just thinking about that, just like, I mean, I just remember being in high school and I was usually like the fifth runner, but anytime I was like close to being number seven, like that was stressful as like, you know, like a 17-year-old on a high school team. I can't imagine it at that level and constantly wondering.
Yeah.
That's so exhausting.
It really was. Yeah. So I took a little time away from running when I moved out to Oregon and started medical school, and then found trail running my second year of medical school, and just fell in love with, you know, being in the forest and in the trail running community out here. Made a lot of friends through that and actually met my husband through that as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. When I interviewed Tyler, he had just placed second at Western States. So were you already married? Where were you along in that journey? I mean, I remember him talking about you in the episode or like before or after we hit record.
Yeah. So we got married in 2019.
Okay.
And he actually ran Western States for the first time like a month after we got married. And he was, I think, 12th or 14th or something that year. Okay. And then it was COVID. So I think then he was second in 2021 when you talked to him. So we had been married for 2 years by then.
So at that point, like, when did you start competitive trail running? Like, you start running in the, you know, finding yourself in the forest while you're in med school. When are you like, I want to work hard again and compete?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, there was never really a switch that flipped that said like, okay, I'm going to try to be a professional now, or I'm going to try to really take this seriously now. I think there are moments of that where I want to resharpen, and I still have moments like that where I just think, okay, I want to really, really focus on this. And that's kind of where I am right now, where I'm like really focused on doing all the little things, doing strength and, you know, taking vitamin D and focusing on my sleep. And of course the training as well, but I'm realizing it's a lot more of the other stuff. It's not just the running that makes the biggest difference. I think even that my very first 50K back in 2016, I mean, I know I wasn't, you know, optimally trained for that, but I still wanted to win. I was still trying really hard, even though I didn't know what I was doing. So I think that fire was always there, but it's definitely become more focused in the last few years.
When we were talking about you on the Relay podcast and Peter and Matt were like, yeah, she finished medical school. She has a 1-year-old, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? What? Like, I can't even comprehend how you fit it all in. And I know we all have our own versions of what busy means or, you know, how full our lives are. But to me, something like medical school, something like being a first-time parent, something different when it's your first because you're like,
you don't know anything.
It's all new. It's a new craft.
It really is.
And then the level at which you run. And I'm like, man, all three of those buckets are like such big buckets. So, I mean, I don't know how to ask it without saying like, how do you do it all? But like, how do you mentally do this? Like, how do you set yourself up for success when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah, I think it sounds a lot crazier than it is. Like, I'm not doing all three of these things to the fullest all the time. Yeah. Like right now, school is really on a back burner. I've graduated from medical school. I'm waiting for my residency placement. So that doesn't require much of my time. So I'm able to focus a lot more on the running and the parenting. Whereas, you know, after my son was born, I wasn't able to run as much because my body wasn't ready for it. Mm-hmm. So I was focusing more on school and parenting. So I think I just acknowledge that I'm not going to be excellent at all three at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I even before my son was born, I would look at my schedule, my academic schedule, and just figure out when the busy times would be and when the more relaxed times would be with school. And then I would kind of plan my racing calendar around that. And I think that's actually really helped me to stay healthy and stay mentally fresh with running, because when all you're doing, at least for me, when all I'm doing is running, if I have a bad workout or a bad race, it hits a lot harder. And when I have something else going on, I'm feeling progress with something else, I'm able to bounce back a lot easier from it.
What do you do when you're like feeling overwhelmed? Like, I mean, I know you're not in school right now, but like when the exams are piling up or things like that, or maybe you're overwhelmed by a big workout or something, like where do you go to find relief?
I would go to Tyler and just like communicate how I'm feeling and what I think I need to feel better, whether it's just more time, or I also try to take inventory of all the other things that I'm taking on, because I think we unknowingly take on a lot of other responsibilities either at work or you know, through running, or maybe it's in friendships. Like, I think a lot of times as women, we want to be a good friend. So we offer to help people with things. And I try to take inventory of all my responsibilities and get rid of any extra things when I'm starting to feel overwhelmed.
It's such an interesting concept, because I'm like, you have this school of thought that is like boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. And then you have this school of thought that's like, say yes, because you want to be, you know, like relationships matter more than anything else, right? Mm-hmm. At the end
Truly.
Of the day.
Yep.
So there's this delicate balance of like holding your boundary, but also being like, showing up is important right now and making those decisions almost on the fly sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to hold both of those at the same time, because you can't say yes to everything. You can't do everything for everyone. So Yeah, it's really tough. And like you said, I couldn't agree more. Relationships matter the most. Like, they make your life so much better. Your relationships, not just with your friends and family, but also with your coworkers.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a tough situation.
It's a dance.
Yeah.
When did Nike Trail come along?
In 2019. I'm trying to think. That was the year we got married. Yeah, Tyler had won Bandera, which was a golden ticket race at the time. I had won this race over in France. I was actually over there for a conference for graduate school. And I did this race, which is, our friend said it's basically like the Way Too Cool of France, which is like early season fast 50K. And I had won that and set a course record, which if you win Way Too Cool and set a course record, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So we had both had some good performances. And then actually Tyler ran into the Nike Trail team manager at the hardware store several times. They were both working on home projects. And eventually we got in touch with him. And it took quite a while. I think it took maybe 4 months before we actually signed with them. But yeah, it was June of 2019.
So you said we. Did you sign as a team? Like the two of you together?
No, we had our own separate contracts, but it was all of the negotiations and conversations were together.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice.
Feels a little less scary. I don't know. I would love doing it that way.
Yeah, it's nice because then it's not all on you to follow up, or you can kind of say, "Oh, can you get back to this person?"
Like,
it's been nice.
So you have I would say, fairly untraditional way of training for ultras in your road work that you do as well.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It's fascinating that you, in 2019, ran Grandma's, and then you went off and you ran CCC, and you that was your like really solid training for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of mimicked that again with CIM to Black Canyon.
Yeah.
So talk to us about that strategy. And if those listening don't know a lot about marathoning to ultra and stuff, maybe explain that a little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up, because I posted about this in the Nike page on Strava, and somebody had commented, you know, why are you running fast, or why are you training yourself to run fast when you need to train yourself to run long? And I was thinking about that. And one thing that's really helpful with doing fast running is that it makes you a more efficient runner. Mm-hmm. And if you can be more efficient over 100 kilometers, that's going to be a huge benefit. So that was kind of my thinking with it. And then also reflecting on how I felt coming off of Grandma's going into CCC, both feeling that just I like the way that marathon training makes me feel just really fast. And then it's so different to the types of training that I do in trail running, that when it's time to shift to the trails, I feel mentally fresh, because I'm not worried about splits. I'm not looking at my watch all the time. I'm not pounding the pavement or running grass loops at Nike. I'm like going back to the trails and the Columbia River Gorge. And I feel like that freshness is really good for me mentally. And I experienced that with this build to Black Canyons, just going back to the trails and feeling really excited about it, but having all of this fitness from CIM. So, and then another thing is there's been a few trail runners that have done similar things, like Ingvild Kaspersen, who won CCC this year. She ran a fast marathon maybe a month or two out. And then actually Ruth Croft, I think the year she won Western States, she also did something similar. So I see that and I think, okay, there's something to this.
What do you like about the marathon? Like, what do you like about the fast stuff?
I actually, it's like the camaraderie that I have with the people that I'm training with. Mm. I've found a really great training group here in Portland, the Bowerman Track Club. And they're just so inspiring and kind. And it's just, it's that bonding that I have with the people that I'm training with that's really fun. And then also I like the tangible aspect of feeling that progress. Like, okay, I'm running the same exact loop that I run every single week. And now I'm running this pace and it feels way easier than it did 2 months ago. And I think that's really cool because I don't get that in trail running, that feeling of tangible fitness. And that gives me a lot of confidence as well.
Yeah, when you talk about the Bowerman Track Club, I do think about Peter Bromka and him talking about when he tried to make the Olympic trials time and like the way that him and the group of guys like showed up together and for mm-hmm. each other and like went after this goal like so hard. That is one way I feel motivated, like to want to work hard again.
Yeah.
Because I think about those relationships and like just like getting after it and like getting so gritty and working so hard together. And there's something so beautiful about that, that as adults, a lot of adults don't have that because we had that in team sports as kids. And mm-hmm. so that's one thing that makes running so beautiful as an adult, because you have that like team camaraderie again, just like you're 15, 16 years old.
Yeah, exactly. It's really special.
All right, friends. This episode of the podcast is supported by Prevenex, my go-to for protein powder, muscle health, joint health. All the vitamins and supplements that you need are going to be at Prevenex.com. They have the highest quality ingredients, clinically effective supplements that promote health and longevity. And what I'm raving about is their muscle health. If you follow me on Instagram, you might see that I've been lifting quite a bit. My goal is 3 days a week of lifting, still running around 5 days a week. And the Muscle Health Plus combines clinically effective doses of creatine monohydrate. If you're taking creatine, you want that monohydrate is the kind that you want. And other essential amino acids. It combines all these amazing ingredients for comprehensive muscle health. And as you age, you know, you hit 30, you hit 40, you hit 50, your muscles break down a certain percentage every decade. And it's so important to fight against that so you can stay strong as you age. This is something I'm taking really importantly. Importantly, is that a word? I'm taking it really seriously. You know, I just hit 40 and this is a big deal to me. So I am focused on the strength training and also taking the muscle health and doing anything complementary that will help me stay strong and help with that muscle growth and protect against the muscle breakdown. So good news, if you have already used my code ANOTHER with Prevenex, you can use the code LINDSEYSTRENGTH, LINDSEY strength, to get 15% off your order. As long as you have muscle health in the cart, you can put anything else in there and you can still get that discount using the code LINDSEYSTRENGTH. You can also use the code ANOTHER if you've never purchased from Prevenex using my code before. That'll still work for 15% off as well. I highly recommend their products. I take their multivitamin. My kids take their vitamins. I really trust the work they're doing and the ingredients that they put in the products. So go to Prevenex.com and check it out. Code LINDSEYSTRENGTH or ANOTHER. All right, friends, back to the show. Now, I heard you talk about your coach on the episode you did with Matt and Peter after CIM. So talk about working with your coach and like, what did that process look like racing CIM and then preparing for Black Canyon?
Yeah. So I'm normally coached by my husband, Tyler.
Oh, okay.
But then for the build to CIM, I just hopped on with the Bowerman team and they're all coached by Elliot Heath. So I pretty much just went under his jurisdiction for that time. And then after CIM, I didn't really run any trails during that build to CIM.
At all. Okay, wow.
No, which is different from when I trained for the marathon trials in 2020. I think I was just a little bit sassy and I was like, I'm going to run trails. I'm not going to just be a total roadie right now. but I didn't feel the need to be that sassy this time around. I just went all in on the roads. So then when it was time for Black Canyon, I thought, okay, well, I want to continue some of this speed and I want to translate it to trails. So I did more of a hybrid scenario where I kept training with the Bowerman team during the week. And then on the weekend, I would do longer trail workouts. And that just meant that Tyler and Elliot kind of had to collaborate on what I was doing. And I think that that worked really well.
Yeah, it's wild to think about you doing like these marathon speed workouts and then going into this race. But I feel like in talking to other ultra runners, like even Sally McRae, who was doing those like 250 races, like she's like, yeah, I still do speed work because it, I think a lot of it because of the form that you mentioned, it just keeps your form from getting lazy, sloppy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting though to think of you on the track, and then I wonder what your competitor, like how they view your training. I mean, we should all be just look like, you know, focus on what we're doing, but I wonder how your competitors view you being the, like, is that scary? Like, here comes Rachel. She's so fast.
I mean, I think it's interesting because in a race, a lot of times we end up just a few minutes apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, wet road or trail. So it's just really fascinating to think, okay, we got here in completely different ways. Like what I needed to be the best I could be looked way different than what this other person needed. So I don't know what people think about it, but I think like a good lesson is just to focus on what you need to be the best you can be. And it may not be, you know, it may not be what a exercise physiologist would think is optimal or, you know, what the world thinks is going to be the best preparation. But if you can find confidence in knowing that you did what was right for you, I think that's pretty ideal.
Yeah. And so you mentioned that Tyler coaches you normally. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's had a lot of success on the trails as well. But like, how do you guys devise that plan? Like you said, that's like right for you. Like we know what his success is and how he finds success. But then how do you make it so that it's your special plan?
Yeah, it's a lot of communication. I think going into Black Canyon, I told him and Elliot that I didn't want to run much more than 60 miles a week, just knowing that I was still in a vulnerable spot with my bone density after stopping breastfeeding. So that was kind of my request / non-negotiable aspect of the training. And I said, if you want me to do these really long runs, I can do them, but then I'll just take more off days during the week. So yeah, we were able to stick to that. I think I ran like 61 miles once in a week. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
wild. I know. It's like, and then somehow I went into a 62 mile race feeling confident. It's really interesting. It's just a lot of communication about how I'm feeling. And Tyler will ask me, what do you think you need? So I think that's really helpful because I know my body well and I know what, confidence-wise, what I need to do to feel like I've crossed all the boxes.
Is that what you were running leading into CIM too?
Oh, no. I don't think I ran more than like 50, 55 miles going into CIM.
Wow.
Yeah. Elliot was like, he was laughing. He was like, people will look at your mileage and think that's not marathon mileage. But then they'll look at your workouts and say, oh, yeah, those are marathon workouts.
Yeah. So you ran 2:35 at CIM, goal to qualify for the trials. Tell me about that process and why that matters, even though you knew you weren't going to run the trials.
Yeah, I think it's something that people outside of running understand.
Yeah.
Not everyone even knows what Western States is. I think more people are learning about trail running and realizing how awesome it is, but you know, my family and people back home that don't know much about trail running, they can understand like, oh, that's cool. You qualified for the Olympic trials. Mm-hmm. And after doing it in 2020, I thought it would be a fun goal to reach for. The time is kind of arbitrary. Mm-hmm. What I really wanted was to just run a hard marathon and then also to have that tangible sign of fitness after having a baby. Like if I was even just able to PR, that would make me really happy and feel confident about my training postpartum.
But did you know, like, I'm in way faster shape than when I ran the 240 at grandma's?
Not initially, but then, yeah, as we went into, like, as the training progressed, I realized that I was in, yeah, probably like 235 shape.
Your breakdown talking about CIM, like, I love hearing you talk about, like, sharing the bottles with the other women and just working together. And it makes it seem so fun, even though you're working so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was this, yeah, the chat with Matt and Peter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and that Finn, was. And I listened to your conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it was great. I feel like early marathon miles, they felt really like pretty smooth and easy. It wasn't like we weren't quite frothing at the mouth yet. So it felt a lot more playful. But yeah, it honestly didn't really feel like racing. It felt like, all right, everybody just let's all run really fast together. I don't care what place I'm in. Like, let's everybody try to, you know, just do the best you can. So I didn't feel, I think, yeah, I didn't know what place I was in. I didn't care, really. It was just super fun.
No, it was Matt and Peter's episode, though, that I did. I don't know why it made me tear up, but like I was driving home from dropping my youngest off at school, and you were talking about the men cheering you guys on as you passed by. And that I don't know cool. why, like, felt it made me feel so emotional thinking of these like badass women charging by the men and the men being like, yeah, go get it. Like that.
It was cool.
Okay. So it's not weird that that gave me tears?
No, it's giving me tears just thinking about it. Like, okay. Yeah.
What a cool experience. Okay. So Black Canyon, though. I loved your race breakdown on your Instagram. Everybody can go look at that if they want to. I also love that your dad was wearing your son.
Yeah, pretty cute, right?
Like, my dad would never do that. I think my husband's dad wore one of our sons on one of our trips with him. But
he loves wearing Lewis.
I love it. And did you know I have a son named Lewis, too?
No. Yeah, oh, that's a great name. How do you spell it?
We're different. I'm okay. Louis, and you're L-E-W, okay. I just saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. My number two is Lewis. I love that name.
And the other one, is it Sandy?
That's our youngest. Yeah, there's Marshall, okay. Lewis, Russell, Sandy.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
Sandy's the little guy.
So great.
He's not little anymore, though. He's a giant five-year-old. He's going to be the biggest kindergartner you've ever seen.
That's amazing.
Well, speaking of your Lewis, talk to us about choosing to become a mom at this point in your career, both with running and about to start your residency.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. There's never a great time to do that, really, truly. I think it was 2021. I had a really good season of running, and I was in my third, almost fourth year of medical school. And it just kind of got to the point where Tyler and I, you know, we knew that we wanted to have a family at some point, and we didn't want to wait until we were like, okay, now's the time. We just kind of wanted to say, okay, this would be an okay time for this to happen. And we just kind of threw caution to the wind and got pregnant pretty quickly. And we were a little bit surprised. We found out the day before I was going down to Bend, Oregon for my surgery rotation. And yeah, it was kind of a whirlwind. I had to rework my whole racing calendar because I wasn't, you know, wasn't going to be traveling and able to really race as much as I wanted to. But it was in the end really good timing because I was able to delay my med school graduation for a year and kind of just stretch that out a little bit. Nike was extremely supportive. We had just gotten a new team manager, and I didn't really know you know, how that was going to go. I don't know of any other trail athletes who have had babies while they were Nike athletes. And of course, Nike doesn't have a great reputation for supporting pregnant women. But I think because of that, they've really changed their policies. And I felt unbelievably supported. My team manager was like, hey, you know, there's no pressure from me or from us to race, or, you know, if you want to, you can, but like, just do what's best for you. So that was really comforting. And then, yeah, after he was born, I was really eager to get back into running, get back into competing. I got a lot of positive, you know, feedback from my pelvic floor PT. And also, I feel like there's this culture of mom runners where I think in the media, we just love to promote and support like these mother crushers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to be like that. I'm going to get back. I'm going to be like a really strong mom who just smashes races. However, I think because of that, I went back to it way harder and way quicker than I should have. When I should have just like backed off a little bit. And I think because of that, I ended up getting injured 6 months postpartum. I had a sacral stress fracture, which is just, it's so classic. I mean, Shannon Robbery, Molly Huddle, Alphine Tuliamuck, Kellen Taylor just shared that she had a stress fracture, or had multiple stress fractures or something after the Olympic trials. So it's just kind of ridiculous to me that this keeps happening. These stories of of postpartum athletes having the same exact injury, and there's such a lack of research and a lack of discussion around it, and still this culture of like, you know, it's the bounce back postpartum culture, which also, I think, just contributes to the loneliness of the postpartum period, where you're trying to get back to fitness and it's really hard. Like, nobody talks about how hard it is or how your body's different. And you're like, what is wrong with me? Everyone else just bounced back so easily. Like, why is it so hard for me?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I think one of the hardest things, too, with like the stress fracture and everything is like, even aside from like the culture, like, oh, if they can do it, I can do it too. It's like, if your body feels good and you're feeling really motivated and you think you're doing all the right things with fueling, adding in your strength, like what's stopping you? You're like, well, I'm doing all the right things. I'm going to be fine. And I have this energy. Let's go use it. So it's almost this like willpower to stop yourself. To slow down even when you feel good. Because I'm assuming when you got your stress fracture, you were probably feeling really good in your training.
I really was. I was feeling scary good.
See? And so you're like, well, I'm going to be fine. I'm like taking the supplements. I'm doing my strength training.
I'm eating a lot.
I'm eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the answer though? Because you don't want to... Because then here's another example is like McKenna Myler, who I... just interviewed, who got seventh at the Olympic Trials Marathon.
Yeah, I listened to that. That was a great episode.
Thank you. She's so sweet. It's like, she's not injured and she is still breastfeeding. So it's like, you don't want to promote this hustle, get back to it culture, but you also want to celebrate what people are doing.
For sure.
But then you, like you just said, then there's pressure because you're like, well, there's this like badass mom culture. So yeah. I mean, what is the answer?
I don't know. That's so tough. I think also just like everybody, we need to all acknowledge that we're so different and pregnancies are so different. And while one person might, you know, have success with a certain postpartum recovery strategy, it might look different for someone else. And I think we just don't have the information, like the research to say, okay, here are the indications for being able to sustain a certain amount of training. Or, you know, we all know we should take vitamin D and eat a lot of food and do strength work, but also, we don't have a way to account for all the differences in the way that our bodies handle pregnancy.
Going back to your story, like, would you have done anything different? And like, how would you have known to?
I think I would have. I mean, I had gotten up to like 60 miles a week around 4 or 5 months postpartum, which saying that now, that just sounds insane. That's what I'm doing now, a year and a half out. That's my cap. Yeah. So I think I would have honestly just capped it at like 30 miles for a long time.
Yeah.
And done a lot. Yeah, I was doing strength work, but I would have done, you know, 3 days a week of strength work, and I would have waited until I could do more heavy lifting before starting running workouts. I would not have signed up for a 50K 4 months postpartum. Or no, it wasn't 4 months, 5 months postpartum. I wasn't actually taking vitamin D, not that I think that would have had a big difference, but that's kind of embarrassing to admit that I wasn't doing that, especially living in Portland. And I think I started running at 6 weeks postpartum. And I think if I have another kid, I'm going to wait at least 12.
Yeah, that's 12 what I keep weeks. Hearing people saying these days is 12.
12. Yeah, 12 to even 6 months. I think when Faith Kipyegon had her daughter, she said, I think she waited 6 months and then she didn't really race for like a year.
That's wild.
You can Google it because I was so curious like how she did it. And she's like, nope, I just didn't run for like 6 months. I think it was 6 months. Oh my gosh. And then when she got back to it, she was doing a lot of strength. I think she was lifting like 3 times a week. So, I mean, we can take all these little lessons from people. And I thought that I had, like you said, I was feeling amazing. My energy was actually really good. I thought I was doing all the things. I was seeing this like world-class pelvic floor PT who was giving me the green light. Like, who am I to say, oh, no, no. You know, as runners, we just want more. So I'm not going to – we're begging our PT to let us run, not saying I don't think I'm ready. So just being more cautious.
It's crazy how I feel like how reckless we used to be even with that. I mean, when people would come back like 2-3 weeks postpartum.
Mm-hmm.
Just start running again like it was nothing. I always started running again 6 weeks postpartum. And I think even as everyday runners, we get caught up in that like, I can get back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And now at 40, I see it so differently than I did at 30. Like when I had my first baby, just as a recreational runner, I was running a marathon 4 months postpartum. Like,
whoa.
I went on a 20-mile stroller run 3 months post, like what? And now,
oh, looking, wow.
I know, it's crazy. Looking back now, I'm like, I don't know if it was a pride thing, if there was something I felt I had to prove. If there was a comparison thing, I saw other moms doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before all the pelvic floor talk was really like hyped up like it is now in a good way.
Yeah.
Like it's good that we're talking about it, but I just feel like those were like the ice ages like so long ago.
But not that long ago.
But no, 10, I guess 11. Yeah, it was 11 years ago. But that's
still not that long ago.
It's not that long ago. I actually feel like now if I were doing those things like with somewhat of the public presence that I have, I would be flagged as someone who's being reckless, you know, and you weren't hearing those conversations then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you do now.
It's so tough, though, because if you felt good doing it and you didn't get injured, like. That's, I think, just acknowledging that that's one end of the spectrum. But mm-hmm. I think in the media, we don't like, I mean, I wasn't invited on any podcasts when I announced that I had my stress fracture because that's not a very fun thing to talk about. So, like, we just tend to talk about the more optimistic things about these incredible stories of women, you know, running really fast and not the many other ones on the other end of the spectrum where we're, or even if you don't get injured, if you're just like, man, my baby's not sleeping, I'm tired, I literally don't have the energy to run. Like, I think just like more people sharing those stories of the other end of the spectrum would make it feel a little bit more realistic.
All right, listen up. Lagoon pillows. Oh my goodness. Lagoon is the best pillow I have ever laid my head on in my 39 and a half years of life. I have looked for good pillows for a very long time. And before Lagoon, I was settled on a higher quality pillow I got at Target. I mean, I've tried Tempur-Pedic, I've tried other brands, and this is by far the best. I think because it's so customized. You fill out a 2-minute sleep quiz, okay? And whether you're a back sleeper, a side sleeper, a belly sleeper, however you sleep, these pillows are incredible. I have the Otter, my husband Glenn has the Fox. They are so perfect when you lay your head on them. And listen, if you want a more firm pillow, they have those options. If you want a more soft pillow, they have those options. And they even send you the filling so you can fill your pillow as full or as little as you want. It is truly customizable. And we all know that like sleep is so important. If you are not sleeping well and the thing that you are laying your head on is contributing to not good sleep, you need to fix it, because we are all working really hard to pursue athletic goals and dreams, and sleep is so important. So listen, go to lagoonsleep.com/Lindsay and use the code Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, to get 15% off your order. And just then come thank me for changing your sleep life, because Lagoon is amazing. All right, friends, back to the show. Yeah, how do you zoom out and like view time as far as all the races I want to do, all the things I want to accomplish, watching my baby grow, maybe or maybe not having another baby, doing my residency? Because you know how they say like everybody says to the new moms, the days are long, but the years are short. But so really, true. Like, it is. It's like disgustingly true. I hate it. But like when you look at the next like 10 years, it's like, whoo, whoo, whoo. You know, everything happens in a blink. And so like, how do you view time as far as like the next year, starting your residency and setting up goals with running and whatnot?
Yeah, I think everything, I just try to hold it really loosely. I think talking to a friend before a race where you're really, you know, you want this outcome so bad, but you can't crush it. It's like holding a baby bunny in the palm of your hand. You're like, okay, I don't want it to go anywhere, but I also can't squeeze it too tight. So when I look forward, I have all of these goals with running, with career, with my medical career, with my family. And I think all three of those buckets, there's so much richness in each one. And I want to make sure that I give them all due diligence while knowing that I can't do them all well at the same time. So I kind of need to see what life throws at me in terms of what residency is like, what racing opportunities I have, what growing our family might look like. And, you know, trying to plan for the best scenario, but not holding on to it so tightly, whether it's with racing, wanting to get to these races. But maybe I'll find, okay, I need to stick to more North America races because travel's too difficult. A lot of the residency programs that we ranked highly have a lot of great training opportunities nearby, with, you know, Salt Lake City has lots of trails, you know, right behind the hospital. So I'm thinking of things like that as we're moving towards residency.
Where else did you apply?
Yeah. So Utah, Portland, where I am right now, OHSU has a program, Virginia Mason and the University of Washington up in Seattle, University of Colorado, UCSF, University of California, San Francisco, Stanford, And then in the Midwest, it was Minnesota and Michigan. And then East Coast was Vermont, Maine, Dartmouth, and Columbia.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of places. And then how did you choose anesthesiology?
Yeah, so my mom was a CRNA, which stands for Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetist. And she and I are very similar, just personality and kind of what, and like our brains work pretty similarly as well. And I did an anesthesia rotation when I was pregnant. And I feel like it didn't just immediately blow me away. But then I went and spent some time with a pediatric anesthesiologist, and it really just like, I was like, okay, this is it. I think I want to do pediatric anesthesiology. So I spent 8 weeks doing that. And then I went back and did some more adult, and I was like, okay, I love this. Like, it's great because you have to like bond with a patient really, really quickly. And I think that's something that I'm good at. Make them feel comfortable. You know, you're the one that's with them the entire time, you know, during their surgery or whatever they're having done. And then the physiology is really cool as well. As an anesthesiologist, you're responsible for maintaining a lot of the basic physiologic functions, like controlling their breathing rate, controlling how big of breaths they're taking, their tidal volume. If their heart rate is too high or too low, you give medications to make sure that it stays in a normal range. So like you're considering everything all at once and you get to intervene on it instantly. So I like the instant gratification as well. I didn't get a lot of that in graduate school.
Doesn't stress you out that you're the person keeping the person alive?
Yeah, that's a huge responsibility. I mean, massive. And so that's why we do a residency, so that we learn how to do that well. Yeah, it is. It's a huge responsibility.
High pressure job. I can't imagine. And as you talk about, yeah, you have to bond with the person quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm like, how many times have I had interactions with the anesthesiologist? Quite a few. 4 births, mm-hmm. a couple surgeries, mm-hmm. and there are for sure some that I felt way more comfortable with than others.
Yeah.
This guy on my last surgery, I was just like, can you give me a hug or something?
Yeah.
You know, like, it is kind of scary going in for surgery. Mm-hmm. And
it is. It's really vulnerable.
The bedside manner is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge.
How much do you guys talk about that piece of it in school?
So I don't know what residency is going to be like, but OHSU for medical school, we had a lot of practice with that. They would have standardized patients where we had to practice giving bad news. Mm. And, you know, it would be something so bad as, you know, your parent died, or mm-hmm. Your child has some really bad illness. Things like that. And they kind of teach us how to do that. Like, there's evidence-based ways to have those difficult conversations or share important information. And then they give us feedback on how we did and what we can do better. So I was really happy with that in my medical training so far. And I hope there's more of it.
Okay, so moving back to running a little bit. So winning Black Canyon did get you a golden ticket to run Western States. And Tyler's running too, right?
Yep.
So what is that like going into Western States as like a power couple, knowing that you're both contenders?
It's super exciting. It's been a lot of fun being on Tyler's crew the last 4 times that he's run it. So I feel like I have a lot of good memories just in and around the Western States weekend on the course. I think logistically it'll be a lot more challenging. So my parents are going to come again this year. They were there last year helping out with Lewis. And then with training, that's another challenging thing because our peak weeks and our all that stuff is going to overlap. So we don't currently have any childcare. And I was just talking to my sister-in-law. Her husband stays home with their two little kids. They have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And he loves having Lewis over, and the cousins love having him over. And I said, we might need to do some more of this. So we're trying to work something out with them where we can bring him over to their house a couple days a week when maybe we're doing our strength work or getting our long runs in or something. I think that's going to be a challenge for sure.
Yeah. I'm like, is there like a really young Barrowman track club teammate that needs to make some extra money?
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't work during the day. Like, that's the challenging part too. Yeah.
Will you be able to, I mean, obviously he's going to be faster than you in the race and whatnot, but will you be able to do any training together?
I think like so. Yeah, we've trained together. I mean, before we had Lewis, we trained together a lot. So I think he's okay with, you know, doing his long runs a little bit slower if it means that we get to spend that much time together. Aww. And he did say he would run the first mile with me at Western States.
Really?
Yeah. He tends to kind of run with some of the women anyways. So I don't think it's like too big of a pull for him, but that'll be really cool a whole mile. That's pretty good.
That's a long time. And then he'll just be like, all right, we'll see you in 15 hours or however long.
I guess so. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Do you think you'll get intel about where he is at your aid stations?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe not the aid stations either, I guess. Yeah, I guess I can ask there, but then I'm thinking once I pick up my pacer and we have a little bit more time to chat, though if he's not doing well, I think that would be pretty deflating. So I don't,
maybe don't want to,
if it's bad, or I'll just have them lie to me and tell me that he's doing great.
Yeah. So this is your first 100.
Yep.
Tell me how that feels.
It feels really exciting, and it's, you know, something that I love so much about the sport of trail running is that there are so many different ways to broaden our horizons. I feel like with road running, it's like, you know, you can do different distances, but it kind of caps out at the marathon. And then within the marathon, it's basically try to run faster and faster and faster, which is exciting. But if that's all there is, I feel a little bit let down by that. But within trail running, there's many, many distances all the way up to 200 miles, and the terrain is so much more varied. So if you get comfortable with doing 100 milers, then you can say, okay, now I want to do a really mountainous 100 miler, or I want to do one at altitude, or I want to do this one in the desert where I have to run through sand. So I'm excited to do something that's completely new to me. And I always said, I think I need to have a baby before I run 100 miles. And now we've done that. So
why was that a thing? Like, why did you want to have a baby first?
It was sort of a joke, but also it was like kind of a nod to the inspiration of seeing a lot of really strong women finishing 100 mile races with their young children. I remember, I think it was 2017 or 2018, seeing this Spanish trail running legend Nuria Picas finish UTMB, and she won, and she crossed the finish line with her two young twin boys. And I was like, that is the coolest thing ever. And I actually got to meet her in Hong Kong this February or January, and I told her that, and she was like, oh, that's giving really cool. So I think it was just sort of this inspiration that I saw from, you know, a lot of these women weren't even running. A lot of these women that I'm thinking of weren't necessarily competitive runners before they had kids. It's like they had kids and then they found running and then they were really good. I'm not sure exactly what Nuria's story was. I think she probably was running before, but yeah.
Is Dad going to be wearing Lewis again? Or he'll be like running around probably. How old is he?
I don't know. He'll be 1 3/4.
Okay. Yeah. You're not counting down the months anymore. He'll be like 18 months or 20 months, or is that what it is? 20 months?
I think he'll be 20. He'll be 19 months.
That's a busy time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he'll like to be strapped down.
Yeah. I'm assuming he's walking.
Yeah.
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 Just wild into everything.
Yeah. He's like really into throwing things right now. Hard things like board books and just like hard and heavy, you know, glass Pyrex dishes. Yeah. Like,
I know. I always say like, I feel not as much anymore now for different reasons because my kids are older, but I just felt like for years I just needed to wear a helmet.
Yes.
You know, because it's just like,
and like
just,
shave your head because they pull your hair.
Yeah. Just like there's things flying everywhere. I feel like I'm constantly going like this, like ducking. And I mean, it's almost like just a natural reflex at this point. But yeah, that'll be interesting. So your parents will be out with him for the race. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so what, how do you set goals for yourself with a race like this?
That's a great question. I think like the biggest goal has to be to finish the distance and to just have a great day, whatever that means. Ideally, it means like that I feel in my heart that I've done my training justice and that I have, you know, that I've demonstrated kind of what I'm capable of on that day. And it's really hard. You can't really say, oh, I want a podium or I want to win or I want to mm-hmm. be this place, because you just don't know what other people are or where they're at with their training, where they're at mentally. I think it's kind of, yeah, it just doesn't make sense to put a goal on it like that. But if all that other stuff goes well, if, you know, I take good care of myself and I'm eating and I'm in a good headspace, like there's no reason to think that I can't, you know, have a good performance on paper. But I think more importantly, I just put together a really solid, fun day that reflects my training.
Well, it's so true. Everybody says, oh, anything can happen in a marathon. And it's like, well, let me tell you about the 100-mile distance.
Right. You can feel like your day is over and then an hour later just rise from the dead. And I mean, that's such a cool thing. I mean, a marathon's not long enough to rebound, yeah. But you can certainly rebound in 100 miles.
And then how do you dig yourself out of mental ruts during these big distances?
I haven't done that many of them, but I think what I would tell myself is just that it's not going to last forever. Mm-hmm. Like just acknowledge. It's actually interesting. Elliot said that to me before Black Canyon. He said, I anticipate you'll have, you know, one or two low points, but just know that they're not going to last forever, and don't force anything through that. So if I'm in a low point, just acknowledge that I'm in a low point. And if there's something to be done about it, if I need to, you know, eat more or slow down or change my shoes or something like that, then address those problems. But if it's just a low point mentally, just know that it's not going to last forever.
I love that. Did you have any points like that in Black Canyon?
I didn't really. I think if I hadn't had Becca, I would have had at least one or two low points in that section. But she didn't really give me like any reason to have a low point. She was just like, we're doing this. Let's go. Let's go faster. So I didn't really have time to have a low point when I was with her.
Becca got second.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us about, because that's the other thing in your race recap. I was like, dear Lord, the amount of women you mentioned just like from the race, doing mm-hmm. the race, on the course, running with you, supporting you, and men as far as the support goes.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this is crazy, like how deep this community runs and how intertwined everybody is.
Yeah.
Tell us about Becca.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that Becca was someone who I actually knew sort of through Strava before.
Oh, wow.
She had broken my fastest known time around Mount St. Helens during COVID. So I knew her name, but I didn't realize it was her as we were racing.
Oh, funny.
But yeah, she came up on me around mile 37 and we just ran together for quite a while. We were in second and third place. There's this big climb and we passed Heather Jackson, who was in first place, kind of towards the top of that climb. And I said to Becca, because she was a little bit ahead of me, I just called up to her and I said, hey, when you pass Heather, make sure you pass her with purpose. Like, I think that's really important for anyone, you know, just to like, don't stop. Like, just go for it. She was like, okay. And I was like, and I'll try to do the same. So then we passed Heather. And I feel like after that, it was just like, all right, we're working together to try to distance ourselves from the rest of the field. And we'll figure out between the two of us. I mean, we didn't say any of this, but I felt like this was the vibe. We'll figure out between the two of us, like, who's going to go 1-2. But she just was I felt like she was just running so strong and running a lot faster than I wanted to be running. But apparently I was capable of running that pace. So we ran together pretty much all the way to mile 52 or 51. Wow. Yeah. And there was a creek crossing. I don't know if you saw any of the live stream. I haven't watched it yet, but apparently at this creek, Becca like slipped back into the river. Oh. And just right there, I put maybe 10, 15 seconds on her. And my pacer caught up to me and he's like, hey, you should, you know, if you can press a little bit right now, you should, because you just put a little bit of a gap on. And so I just, I tried to run a little bit faster there. And that ended up being like the break that happened between the two of us.
How did you how did you stay calm when he said that? Like, okay, now I gotta do it.
Yeah, I was like, there's still like 12 miles of race left. I kind of like, if that hadn't happened, I was like, oh, I want to just like run with her until a few miles to go. Like, why do we have to do this now? But I don't know. I trusted him. And he also was like, you know, if you feel like you can, do it. Obviously, if you're in survival mode, don't light a match right now. But I felt like I had enough matches in the tank to spend one there.
But like, I feel like everybody says their worst nightmare is like having to duke it out in the last couple miles of a ultra. And is it because you have marathon speed? Like, does that lie in your favor?
I guess I haven't thought through that part. I mean, I kind of like, I think, I mean, ever since high school, I've been like a strong closer.
Okay.
So while it sounds kind of stressful to have to do that, also sounds kind of fun. So yeah, I don't know.
I think it sounds terrifying.
I haven't had that happen yet.
Oh my gosh. Who is it? Is it Claire Gallagher and Brittany?
Oh, that was so epic. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Just like 98 miles of.
Yeah. And Brittany caught up to Claire, which normally when you get caught, you just get passed.
Uh-huh.
But apparently not in that case. Like, Claire was just like, she took off.
I can't imagine. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, one of my favorite questions, because you said like, I want to have fun, but I also want to like do my training justice. And I always just love to hear people talk about like how something that is so hard can be fun.
Yeah. I would say to those people, think about a time in your life. Doesn't have to be athletic. It could be, you know, finals week. And then that feeling that you have when you've passed your classes and you worked really hard to, you know, get whatever grade you got, or maybe you planned your wedding. Like, anything that's worth doing is hard. So we get to experience that weekly with running. When you're in training, you get to experience the satisfaction of working hard at something. And I think that is inherently fun. And that's, to me, kind of what life is all about.
That's a good point. Makes you think about your workouts a little bit differently. Like, I think a lot of people get this, like, dread. Like, you know you're craving how it's going to feel afterwards. But you get this, like, dread leading into it. Like, oh, this is going to hurt so bad. Am I going to be able to be mentally strong? All yada, yada, yada. And that's the other thing about running, and especially running ultras, is, like, maybe not especially running ultras, maybe running in general, like just staying present. Mm-hmm. Like you're thinking about, if you think too much about that satisfaction afterward, you're going to pull yourself out of the moment you're in now. So how do you manage that?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to find joy in the workout too. It can't just be, I'm waiting to be done. And something that I think contributes to that dread of workouts is when you see, especially for something like marathon training, where you have to hit certain splits, and you think, oh, I don't know if I can do that. And I had that thought weekly, reading my workouts, like, really? You think I can run like this workout? This sounds crazy. But actually, Peter Bromka posted something the other day. It was a video of Mike Smith, the NAU coach, proctoring a workout with his athletes, and he said T, which I assume is threshold. He said T is not a pace, it's a feeling or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I love that so much. Like, yeah. I think we all need to not stress about paces, because our paces don't consider our sleep the night before or our stress or our, you know, how our nutrition has been. Like, there's such a there's a lot of things that contribute to how we're going to feel in our workout. And I think if you can go into every workout feeling like, okay, I want this to be a good effort, that does not mean 100% race effort. That just means I want to nail this workout for the purpose of what it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. If this was meant to be this type of effort or this type of speed, then I want to nail that in the context of how I'm feeling today. And I have a good example of that. When I was training for CIM, we were doing some 1200s. Malia, who's actually, she's fresh out of college, so she's super young. We're doing these 1200s together, and we're just not hitting our splits. And I'm starting to get stressed. I'm like, oh, we're not hitting our splits. What's wrong with us? And she just looked at me and she said, it feels hard enough to me, I'm going to stop looking at my watch. And I, like, that sticks with me to this day. Like, I need to be more like that and stop looking at the watch and just think, is my effort right? And, you know, sometimes it's going to be, you're actually going to run faster than your coach wrote. And that's happened to me as well. And I, you know, I go back to him and I say, I accidentally ran a couple of 525s and you said to run 545. and he goes, was it? And I'm like, I'm so sorry. And he's like, well, was the number wrong or was it feeling too hard? And I was like, no, the number was wrong. And he's like, okay, so you're just fit.
You're just really fast.
But I think we need to, like, we need to just be okay with the off days too. And they're not even off days. It's just life. Like, and I think you can still get a lot of joy and satisfaction in just putting in the humble work. Like, you don't have to nail your workouts. Just show up. Try. Don't try so hard that you're putting in a race effort every week, but just try to, you know, 80%. That's what we say we're going for.
Yeah, that's really good. I know sometimes I've been in races in the past where I'm like, didn't you work harder than this in a workout? Like, I think so many amateur runners especially leave their races in their workouts.
Exactly.
And I don't know what it is. Like, is it because in the workout you want to prove to yourself you can then do it in the race, but then you've raced your workout.
Mm-hmm. I did that before – or at least I realize now, I think I did that before I ran the Olympic trials in 2020. Mm-hmm. You know that key 16, 14 miles mm-hmm. at race at marathon pace. It's like you get yourself so hyped up for that. And like you said, you want to prove that you can do that in the workout. So you have the confidence you can do it in the race. And I told Elliot, like, leading into CIM, I was like, I definitely want that workout, that 16-mile thing. It's just gave me a lot of confidence. And he's like, okay, well, do you feel – I mean, basically, he convinced me not to do that. And it was genius because I didn't then leave my hardest effort out, 4 weeks before the race or whatever.
So what workout did you do instead?
So he – I don't remember all the details of it, but it ended up actually being net 18 miles at marathon pace, but it wasn't just all continuous. It was like some faster, some slower, kind of like in – it was like 3 miles at a little bit faster than pace, and then like some in and out miles, and then I think a progressive at the end, something like that. It's all on Strava. I don't hide anything. Oh. It's all on Strava.
Yeah, how do you feel about that situation, like putting everything out there? Does Tyler also put everything out there?
Yeah, we both do. I mean, it's not – there's no secret sauce.
Yeah.
I think the secret – you know, if you want the biggest gains, like, get 9 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. I mean, I don't think that the training is nothing flashy, nothing special. I feel like it's just – I'm proud of my humble training and the way that I take care of my body. And I have nothing to hide.
So like Western States is June and then you start your residency in July. So you're just like big shift, life change, see how it goes and then make decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I actually made a friend on Instagram. His name's Brad. Shout out Brad.
Hey, Brad.
He did the same thing. He started his residency like the day after Western States.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I'll have to reach out to him for some tips. But he said he was just kind of hobbling around the hospital on his first day of work. So,
Are you starting the day after?
It depends where I match. There's kind of a variety of start times. But my understanding is most places I'll have some sort of orientation actually before Western States, and then the first day of work, meaning like seeing patients and all of that, would be, I think, the Monday after Western States.
Wow. Okay. So maybe a boring question, but like, do you guys own your home? Like, will you be selling your house if you don't match in Portland?
I think we'll probably rent it out. Okay.
You'll be temporary.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think we're already feeling pretty, I'm looking around, like it's a pretty small house.
Oh, sure.
So we're already kind of outgrowing it, but we like where it is. And I think it's kind of nice to have a home that can kind of roll with the housing market in Portland. Like if the housing market gets kind of crazy, at least we'll have something to sell that will reflect the current market.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. We're not really real estate moguls or anything like that, but that's our thinking.
Yeah, no, that's good. What's something professionally or personally you'd like to do that you haven't done yet?
For the longest time it was have a baby. Mm-hmm. Now it's run 100 miles and complete my residency.
Working on both of them.
Yep.
So when you back to the residency real quick. So when you do that, are you thinking Tyler will like be like stay at home dad life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're hoping to have some sort of childcare where Lewis can go like half days or something.
Like a preschool thing.
Yeah. So Tyler can have a half a day to do his training, do his coaching, and then he can do fun stuff with Lewis.
Yeah, no, that's good. I know. I feel like there's a lot of programs that are like 9 to 1 or 9 to 2 at least.
That would be perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like most of them start when they're 2.
Oh, that's great.
What is the best, most recent book you've read?
I read this book every day, multiple times a day. You've probably read it too. Little Blue Truck.
I thought you were going to say the Bible.
No.
No, I don't know Little Blue Truck.
What? I'm going to send it to you. It's so good. There's really good lessons in there. You know, we talk about how important relationships are. I mean, it's a quick read. I would say I don't want to spoil it, but basically Little Blue Truck helps out sort of an unfriendly, not community-oriented dump truck. And in helping out the dump truck, Little Blue Truck gets stuck in the mud, and all his friends that he has these amazing relationships with, the cow, the pig, the goat, they all jump in the mud to help get Little Blue Truck unstuck. And in doing so, the dump truck realizes it's really important to be kind to others and to just be a good community member. And I just think it's the cutest, best little lesson for all of us.
Are you reading this to Lewis?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a children's book. It's
but
like,
my boys aren't, they're not too big.
No, they're not too big. It's so good. Because you like it too. Okay. It's so good.
No, I've never heard of it. Oh my gosh. Okay. Are you reading any adult books also?
You know, I don't really read.
I mean, I wouldn't either if I were you. Like if I just finished medical school and I had a baby and I was training for Western State soon.
I do have a book on hold at the library that's been on hold for like 3 months called The Nightingale. I've heard it's really good. You've read it?
Actually, I have not. I cannot believe I have not read that book. It is probably the most recommended book I've ever heard on this podcast.
Wow.
Wow. I don't know why I keep putting it off. I just, because I've read a ton of Kristen Hanna books, but.
Okay. Yeah, I can't like wait.
The time period, and I'm just like, I don't know if I want to go there mentally right now, but I for some reason I keep, maybe because I've heard it's so good that I'm like.
Don't want to be disappointed.
Or I don't want it to be over.
Oh, yeah. You always have that kind of something to look forward to.
Yeah. I kind of stopped asking this question, but I'll bring it back today since you've listened to the podcast for a while. Who's someone fun, motivating, or inspiring you'd like to? How about I just say you'd like to get to know instead of coffee, tea, or cocktail? I feel like I've grown out of that question, but maybe we'll say you'd like to get to know.
Yeah. I would have to say Courtney DeWalter. Mm. I feel like I've met her and spent time with her, but I would love like just some one-on-one quality time. She's as amazing as she seems, but I just would love to just ask her tons of questions and get to know her more.
Mm, I love that. I secretly in my head, I'm like, how many friendships can come out of this question now from if runners are saying other runners and then that runner might hear that person. Maybe they'll slide into their DMs.
Yeah.
Friend connections.
That'd be great.
What is your last message to leave with our audience?
I think we really covered a lot of good stuff here. Mm. My last message is just, if you're listening to this, you're probably a fan of the sport. You're probably some kind of runner yourself. And I just would like to encourage everyone, if you haven't, to try trail running. Mm. And to think about like what you need to feel fulfilled with your running and not get distracted by what you see other people doing, thinking that's what you need.
That's good. Rachel Drake, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lindsay. This was so fun.
All right, friends. Thanks so much for being here today. Thanks, Rachel, for coming on the podcast. Again, you can find Rachel on Instagram. She's Rachel Ray Drake over there. I'm Lindsay Hine 626. Let us know what you thought about the episode. Go give Rachel some love. Let's cheer her on for her first Western States this summer. Learn more about this show and all the shows in our network at sandyboyproductions.com. You can also find information about my training plans that I have for the half marathon and the marathon at lindsayhine.com. Thanks for being here. Grateful for each of you. We'll see you next week. And I'll have another.